This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
You told the police that you'd never met my son, but you had.
Yes.
Now streaming on Apple TV Plus from Academy Award winner Alfonso Cuarón. Disclaimer.
It was time to bring justice.
Critics are raving. It's a cunning psychological thriller.
Something happened years ago.
What exactly happened?
He died.
Addictive and extraordinary. It's the best TV show of the year.
I had to tell the world the truth.
Disclaimer. Now streaming on Apple TV Plus.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here, everyone. If anyone thought this was slowing down, everything would be a slower news cycle. Those are the old days. It's not the new days as we head to the holidays. And believe me, Congress is working really hard, too. The only person not working hard is our current president. He's in Delaware already. So this hour is going to be great. Congressman Tony Gonzalez, one of the most respected people in Congress, or that I respect the most, serves our country and then really works hard for the country over in Texas because he really wants to reinforce that border, pro-military, and willing to take on his own party when he has to. Senator John Cornyn is standing by, too. We'll be with him in just a moment, so let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The Trump team coming in has carte blanche to go in and totally change our relationship to our government. And that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I think Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are working toward. Donald Trump is going to do. And it's going to be fundamentally different.
I think so, too. The Trump transition hitting its stride. We talk about the sense of optimism that Ari was just reflecting on as another big business titan hails the chief at Mar-a-Lago.
Number two.
They've been to the complexes. They've said that they've never been under gang control. So it seems like another one of those things that Donald Trump is either exaggerating or making up.
Shame on you, Jared Polis. Your sanctuary policies allowed this.
Yes, and you're hearing the debate in Colorado. Governor Jared Polis mocking Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. He lied. Governor Polis, local officials in Aurora mocked those who liked J.D. Vance and Trump, who said Aurora being overrun by transnational illegal alien gangs was fiction. Guess what? Five more gangbangers were arrested, 20 overall, and 20 states experiencing infiltration from the Venezuelan gang. That is time to put politics aside.
Number one.
They understand the situation. They said, it's not directed to you, Mr. Speaker, but we don't like the spending. I said, guess what, fellas? I don't either. We got to get this done because here's the key. By doing this, we are clearing the decks and we are setting up for Trump to come in roaring back with the America First agenda.
Well, after Speaker Johnson spoke to us on Fox and Friends with that comment, they blew up the deal. Elon Musk, President Trump, blow the budget deal hatched by outgoing leadership. As total government shutdown looms, can it be put back together? Will it cost Speaker Johnson his job? Senator John Cornyn joins us now. He's seen this brinksmanship before, but this feels different, Senator. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Brian. Good to be with you.
Hey, Senator, I'm used to you fighting with Schumer or, you know, McConnell fighting with Hakeem Jeffries, perhaps, or Speaker Pelosi. But this is different. When Elon Musk tweets out, I don't like this deal, don't vote for it, and Donald Trump joins it after, and Elon Musk is in business and Donald Trump isn't president yet, but with all the power and respect that they have, what does that do with the chance of a deal being done before Christmas?
Well, I think what Elon Musk said was a statement of the obvious. This bill was supposed to be a temporary bill that would carry us over till March and keep the lights on here, but it ended up being a Christmas tree, and what I've experienced around here over many years is the fact that the more stuff you start adding to it, then the more demands are going to be for reciprocal treatment by the Democrats, and it just became unsustainable. So I think this is just part of the transition from the Biden administration to the Trump administration. We'll get this sorted out. I expect in all likelihood there'll be some sort of short-term continuing resolution to get us over past January the 3rd.
Here's Hakeem Jeffries, Cut 5.
House Republicans, House Democrats, Senate Republicans, and Senate Democrats reached a bipartisan agreement to fund the government, keep it open, and meet the needs of the American people. We reached a bipartisan agreement to provide disaster assistance to everyday Americans whose lives have been upended and turned upside down as a result of hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, floods, and other types of extreme weather events. We reached a bipartisan agreement to meet the needs of the American people and provide assistance to farmers, families, children, seniors, veterans, men and women in uniform, and working class Americans.
So he went on to blame Republicans for that, and Elon Musk fired back at Jeffries on X. He says, "You seem to think the public is dumb. They are not." So,
well,
game
the,
on.
Well, the deal is, Brian, is Hakeem Jeffries knows that none of that stuff has to ride on the continuing resolution. The Speaker put those disaster relief bills for the Hurricane Helene victims and there are farmers who are suffering right now up for a standalone vote. Let's see whether Hakeem Jeffries and Democrats will provide the votes for that. But like I said, once you make a request, and by and large, those were viewed as Republican requests, then the Democrats are going to demand some sort of quid pro quo. And that's what got us in the bind we're in right now.
Senator, I got to bring you to something. I mean, just some of the things for people at home that bother people like Elon Musk and me and you, spending $3 million to test the inspection of molasses. The Global Engagement Center, the State Department office dedicated to censorship, will get another year of funding. That's questionable. No longer calling homeless adults and children homeless because they want a new label. That costs money. Paying for juvenile delinquents to get their driver's licenses. A feral swine eradication program. Paying for having the federal government pay for the bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge. So, and then moving the Redskins back to Washington, D.C. People go, really? I thought we were going to be fiscally responsible. But what I always think about is you're not in power yet. You don't have the majority in the Senate. You barely have a majority in the House, and you don't have the presidency. You don't have that much power yet, Senator.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. That's why I think a short-term continuing resolution to maintain the status quo and keep the lights on makes sense, because then next year, come January the 3rd, when the new Congress is sworn in, and then on January the 20th, when President Trump is sworn back into office, then we will be at least nominally in control. But as you point out, I think there's going to be a relatively thin margin that the Speaker is going to have. And now you're hearing rumbling about whether the Speaker will be able to keep his job. But I think it's in President Trump's best interest. I think it's in the nation's best interest that we calm this down and we get to January the 3rd, and then we get about doing the sort of reasonable and rational spending cuts that I trust that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy will be able to identify, things that we already know are a waste of money and inefficient and bureaucratic. So we just need to get to the new year and as quickly as we can and minimize the damage in the interim.
If you could educate me, what would a continuing resolution look like? Does that also have to be agreed upon about what you're actually having that?
Yeah, all it do is say that the current policies will continue. It basically is just a date change. So instead of expiring on December the 20th, it expires on January the 3rd.
You think Democrats would go with that?
Well, I mean, they say they don't want to shut down the government. And right now we're looking at a deadline of tomorrow night. So there's not a lot of time. And I think this is probably where we will end up. And I think the Democrats will go along with it because I don't think they want to get blamed for a shutdown.
So, Senator, something else you did get done yesterday, it looks like the Senate, the Stop Institutional Child Abuse Act is through, right? It's going to just be the president's signature?
Yeah, we worked with Paris Hilton, who highlighted this problem. You know, many of these institutions, that do good work, but she helped highlight some of the abuses that occurred, where basically people were locked up in solitary confinement and given drugs to keep them quiet, and And so this provides a measure of supervision and regulation at the federal level that didn't exist before. And thanks to her for highlighting it.
I just like when you guys get together on stuff. And with so many co-sponsors on both sides of the aisle, it was encouraging. Speaking about getting together, Axios reporting that that leading Democrats and senators are beginning to talk quietly behind closed doors about some type of a border security act that I see that Senator Kelly might be involved in. What could you tell us about that?
Well, I guess it's so secret I haven't heard of it before until you reported it. I saw Fox and Friends. But, you know, this is just this is not realistic. I mean, Democrats are simply not serious when it comes to the border, which is why we need to, on day one, President Trump needs to rescind a lot of these executive orders that President Biden put into place, basically opening our borders to anybody and everybody who could make it there and then releasing them into the interior. That's the magnet that continues to draw people from all around the world, because there are people who want to come, and there's a lot of money to be made by the cartels who traffic in people and drugs.
Senator, the thing that really burns me is, you know, there's times when you exaggerate in the campaign trail. Everybody does. Or you might say, remember when Harry Reid came out and just flat out and said Mitt Romney doesn't pay taxes? Everyone's like, what? Majority leader? I'm sure the majority leader would never say that if it's not true. And then later he bragged about the fact that he made it up. But then when you talk about Aurora and an apartment complex, J.D. Vance came out and said this has been taken over by these Venezuelan gangs. I want you to remember, look back in this exchange, cut 15.
President Trump was actually in Aurora, Colorado, talking to people on the ground. And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened.
Martha.
I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border?
I mean, not only is it a handful, it was real, and then Governor Polis says it didn't happen, said Donald Trump lied. Five more migrants were detained in Aurora. It's up to 20 now from this Venezuelan gang. ISIS scooped them up after they kidnapped a person, stabbed one of them, ripped out their fingernails as they take over apartment complexes in Aurora, Colorado. The police chief said, I told you this in September. And the federal government said, when you cross the border, once they cross the border, they're pretty much your problem.
Yeah, well, good for J.D. Vance for pushing back and on that characterization, trying to minimize this. Just because it didn't happen to the interviewer, she's not exposed to it. That doesn't mean a lot of other people aren't being hurt in the process by the open border policies of the Biden administration. But thank goodness for a free press that can report these things. But as you know, a lot of the mainstream media is just brushes this under the rug. But thanks to Fox and other outlets on the internet and elsewhere who will report these things so people can judge for themselves. And I think what we saw on November 5th was a referendum on the Biden border policies, and we know what the outcome was.
Headlines, October 13th, Vance stands by Trump's false claim about Venezuelan gangs in Aurora. Washington Post, October 11th, Trump campaigns in Aurora, Colorado, site of false claims about gangs. New York Times, September 15th, how the false story of a gang takeover in Colorado reached Trump. So, I mean, this is, I think, Senator, you've seen a lot in your career, but I think that the American people just are bypassing this stuff, and they're seeing video, and they're saying, well, who's telling the truth here? But yet some people not fully engaged who do a million things, four kids, soccer games and football practice, they're going to, oh, this Donald Trump, is that the liar? Is that the guy that makes stuff up? I think people have just got a wake-up call and go, I am not going to let somebody else tell me what to think. I'm going to start thinking on my own.
Absolutely. Well, first, people need to be presented with the information rather than have this scandal swept under the rug. But, you know, I think that's why the election turned out the way it did, Brian, because people are fed up. They realize they've been lied to, and they're not going to take it anymore.
I hear you. Senator, I think it's going to be an exciting 4 years. I really do. I hope to have you on a lot to talk about it. Maybe some Democrats Fetterman will work with you and do some things bipartisan. Senator John Cornyn, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you about this border wall and selling off of the border wall and how it was just stopped. Already, Trump making an impact. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You told the police that you'd never met my son, but you had.
Yes.
Now streaming on Apple TV Plus from Academy Award winner Alfonso Cuarón. Disclaimer.
It was time to bring justice.
Critics are raving. It's a cunning psychological thriller.
Something happened years ago.
What exactly happened?
He died.
Addictive and extraordinary. It's the best TV show of the year.
I had to tell the world the truth.
Disclaimer. Now streaming on Apple TV Plus.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
The American people are fed up. They outright rejected Joe Biden's failed America last agenda. But instead of listening, Biden doubled down. He's not just ignoring the crisis. He's selling off pieces of the border wall, as you all have been reading. I tell you this, that wall will be back in action on day one under President Trump when he returns to office. It will serve as a deterrent. It was meant to be because it works and the American people demanded it.
So that is Kevin Hearn, and they're talking about the selling off of what was left of the border wall. So the Texas said, if it's good wall, we'll buy it off auction and we'll bring it back. They got word that it was not good, but then they're seeing video that it was good and there is some left. So they have bought in the past. And now, after President Trump said, stop the border wall, calling on Joe Biden to jump in and stop the border wall, President Trump put this out. He basically said, don't do it. And a huge win for Trump, as Dan Patrick puts out, the lieutenant governor, and Texas. The border wall that Joe Biden was attempting to auction off, the pennies on the dollar, in secret, has been stopped. Last Thursday, a tip from Border Patrol exposed Biden for attempting to sell wall panels. A few days later, the case was solved. Biden administration got caught red-handed by Trump in Texas. I didn't get bad information from our Texas people. Biden administration was trying to hide them for a few days and rush them to auction. Texas was not notified about the auction like they did last summer when we bought $12 million worth of wall at 3.8 miles of wall panels. The only reason Texas can do this, they're one of the few states with a surplus. They don't have a state tax. I don't know how they do it, personally. They don't have state tax. And in California, they're buried in debt and letting illegal immigrants in and providing all these accommodations to them, including letting them go to school for free. I think they're even paying for parts of their college. It is absolutely insane. But what I like about this issue, it's really not a gray area. Any Border Patrol person says the wall helps. Any Border Patrol person says the electronics and the sophistication and the surveillance material on top of the wall works. It's not a cure-all, but there's no cure-all for anything, period, in life. But what it does is help control the influx, and it helps hone and funnel people a certain direction. Here's Andy Biggs about his big focus, Cut 22.
Well, so the first thing they're going to do is they're going to take the shackles off ICE and CBP, and they're going to say, enforce the law. They want to do expedited removal as well. You add those in there, and that will actually slow down the flow at the border almost immediately. The other thing that they're going to need resources. Those resources are going to be everything from personnel. They're going to need seats on planes to remove people. They're going to need some soft-sided facilities to go up for people. So we've talked about that, the resources that they need. Congress is going to have to deliver on those resources. And once that – they're ready to go. Because the first step is to say, we're going to enforce the law.
If the actual story is, and that is Andy Biggs, he'll be doing a lot. So they could do things on reconciliation, and they'll certainly get that through the House and Senate. I think that's one of the things that Speaker Johnson will be able to get through, too, because I don't know any Republican that isn't for a strong border. So I asked our reporter, and they didn't really have an answer, but what do Democrats want? Like, why are they in talks, which I hear is happening? And what they want is a pathway to citizenship. But most of all, if you gave them something, like you got the Dreamers who were brought here as children and had been here for 20 plus years, if they have a certain threshold for the Dreamers, that would be something that they would want. because Democrats know this doesn't mean the Hispanic vote doesn't go to Republicans if you're tough on the border.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You caused all this money to go to illegal immigrants, not Harold Washington. You going to be held accountable for it.
We need Tom Homan here in Chicago. We need Donald Trump. We need to start voting different in these cities like New York and Chicago. You got a 14% approval rating, so the people is looking like they're telling you that you're fired, man. Can you do the job, Mr. Brandon Johnson?
So that is some of the anger in Chicago because of what's happening in our southern border, for the most part, some coming through the northern border, for southern border. And it really started with the busing, symbolic in some cases, the busing of illegal immigrants crossing from Arizona and Texas. In California and New Mexico, they just want to pay for it. But then all these illegal immigrants just flooding major cities and small towns. I mean, they took over a small town in Utah. They're taking over a small town in Aurora, Colorado. It's become a national issue. And now Texas is saying, now you know what we've been living through. And that was the people of Chicago in the urban environment going after their mayor day after day who wants to protect illegal immigrants, doesn't care if they're criminal or not. And I'm not exaggerating. Congressman Tony Gonzalez joins us now, Republican. He's on Homeland Security Appropriations and a decorated veteran. Congressman, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me.
So your thoughts about the city uproars that we're seeing in New York City, in Chicago, Philadelphia, outrage in Aurora, and amongst the people in Denver. This is a national issue.
This is absolutely a national issue, and it's only going to get worse. What I mean, our people are only going to be more and more vocal. In many cases, you know, in Texas, especially along in my district along the border, we've lived this for 4 years of hell through the Biden administration. Chicago and Denver and some of these other places, they're probably about year two. So you wait a little bit more, and I'm telling you, people are going to be pitchforks and they're going to be done with the politicians blaming someone else, or worse yet, giving your taxpayer dollars to people that have broken the law and that are here illegally. It's pure madness, and I think what you're going to see is more and more of these politicians all of a sudden have this change of heart, and I welcome it. You know, it's time for us to make sure Americans are safe and we take care of our own communities.
So you think it's possible to have a massive effect? Everybody knows, and one thing about these border crossers, these coyotes, they know what's happening in politics in America. Do they know what's coming in Trump? And has that affected what you're seeing at your border in Texas?
It absolutely has. Yeah, no, they know our policies better than we do in some cases. And they will tell the people, you know, these people that are crossing illegally what to say, where to go. They'll walk it all through that. So as soon as there's a policy shift, and there will be an earthquake policy shift on January 20th when President Trump is sworn in, it'll immediately come to a halt. I'm already seeing it now where they're pushing, you know, kind of like this fire sale. You know, it's a last minute time to get into the country before, you know, Biden leaves. And so there will be big changes. The other part of it, too, is it's becoming more and more dangerous. So more and more people, everyday people, have a direct story on how their life was impacted in a negative way, one way or another, due to this crisis.
So we need cities to react. It can't just be the Republican in Texas. It's got to be the Democratic mayor in New York. And at least Mayor Adams seems to be saying the right thing now, but enlightening us on the conversation he had over the last 4 years and how he got alienated from the White House. Cut 16.
When this issue happened and we asked for assistance over and over again, and I refused to remain silent while I was watching this city harm, we no longer received the support that we deserved. We no longer had an opportunity to communicate with the president. It was a clear statement from the White House that they didn't appear to be happy that I was standing up for the city. And other mayors should do that. Look at what happened in these other cities, Chicago, Denver, Los Angeles, Houston. Cities should not be taking away the resources from their residents to handle a national crisis.
Your thoughts about what he just told us?
He is spot on. Essentially, what the Biden administration has done for 4 years is it has bribed all these little cities and municipalities and essentially said, hey, if you take all these people that are here illegally that we're going to send to you, we're going to cut you a check. And what I told all my communities, San Antonio, El Paso, all the large communities and the small ones, I said that there is no amount of money that will ever get you out of this. And the line I like to use is, it's like Hotel California. You can enter, but you can never leave. And if you're waiting on a check from the federal government, you're going to be waiting a long time. It's always overpromised and underdelivered. So the mayor of New York is exactly right. And the minute you say, hey, you know what, I'm out, they completely cut you off, but they don't cut off the problem that they created. So it's a huge mess to clean up. I look forward to, you know, working with President Trump and making sure that we get to work on day one to keep all Americans safe wherever you're at.
So, Congressman, you're Hispanic. You understand for the longest time that the thought was if you're tough on the border, the message to the Hispanic community is you don't like Hispanics. But as you see as Donald Trump gets more and more Hispanic votes to the point you're almost in a flat-footed tie, do you think Democrats will say, okay, it's not to our political benefit to not be strong on the border? So Senator Gary Peters of Michigan knows that Trump is popular there, and that resonated. Senator Mark Kelly sees that Republicans came back in Arizona. So just in political reality, will that help sell a different immigration policy, a tough one?
Absolutely. I'm already seeing it happen. I'm having, you know, Democrat members stop me in the hallway and have conversations on go, hey, Tony, what are some of your ideas on this border that we can border security that we can work together on? And you know what, Brian, there's so many opportunities. We don't have to get crazy or extreme or any of that. I fight very hard for legal immigration. I fight very hard for those that are people that are doing it the right way to make sure they don't get put in the same category as these convicted criminals. But if you remember back in September, I got ICE to give me a letter that said there were 600,000 convicted criminal illegal aliens. That's the conversations I'm having with my Democrat colleagues, and they're open to it. So I think they'll be as long as they kind of are focused on delivering on some of these things. How can you say no to not keeping your community safe wherever it is?
I hear you. And you know what? I hope the Republican Party stops primarying people like you, which they were trying to do, Matt Gaetz. Now he's history, thankfully. And going after Henry Cuellar on the Democratic side. They would try to make, because he's pro-life and he's pro-border enforcement. Do you think that they'll start letting up?
What I love about being a Republican is we love to fight, but sometimes we love to fight each other. I'm of the mindset of let's go fight. Like the real enemy is those that are trying to destroy our country. You know, if we have a few differences here or there, that's small potatoes compared to the big issue at hand. I've always been focused on uniting people and how do we get our party moving forward. And like you said, there are lots of opportunities in this country to go out and make sure that we get gains, long-term gains, you know, not only to secure the House, but the Senate.
Yep.
And we can really craft some meaningful policy shifts. But I don't think the fight's going to go away. But good luck. Good luck beating me in anything. I fought in two wars.
I hear you. And you win. Congressman, I got to put forward to the spending bill. It blew up yesterday. Yep. President Trump, Elon Musk, and then President Trump weighed in, said 1,500 plus pages. There's too much stuff in here I can't sign off on. I don't want to deal with the debt ceiling in June, and I don't want to deal with this in March. Here's Steve Scalise. Cut one.
Yeah, we're still working through it. We had a good productive meeting, so you know, we're going to continue to work through the night, in the morning to get an agreement we can bring to the floor.
Is debt ceiling going to be part of it?
Is debt limit going to be part of this? We're not there yet.
So that was Steve Scalise, obviously walking among the leadership. And I will say that found out that Speaker Johnson talked to Elon Musk for a long time and Vivek Ramaswamy and the president, and then met with J.D. Vance in his office for 40 minutes. What could you tell us?
Well, I mean, I could tell you what we already know, which is it's a mess. But the other thing that gets me is here we are putting all this time and energy and effort and arm wrestling over something that's going to kick the can down the road to March 14th just so we can do it all over again. Like enough with kicking it's not going to get any better if you know, the more you kick the can down the road. So why don't you just solve it once and for all? I've been advocating to push our appropriations bills. Like that's what we've worked all year long on. You know, if President Trump wants to talk about the debt ceiling, let's do it. I don't like shutdowns, Brian, but I also don't like more of the same. And this election clearly told us we're done. The American people are done with more of the same. So I welcome the shakeup. I welcome the, you know, you're not going to get a last minute, you know, shove it down your throat, kick the can down the road for 3 months just to do it again. And President Trump is right. There's a lot of things that we have to do on day one. And if he is burdened with all these other things, it'll be like his first term where, you know, 2 years
right.
he was fighting Republicans to get what he needed done.
So, Congressman, you are not going to sign off on this.
I'm not. And honestly, Brian, I've voted against every CR that I can think back to.
Oh, okay.
Because all they do is they just delay the inevitable. Like, let's just get it done. Like, why, you know, why not today? I think back to my grandfather who always said, you know, what better time than now?
I hear you. I just don't know what's possible to get done in a few days when you probably should have done it through committees, your appropriations mm-hmm. work, and then voted on it in regular order. I just think people are just waiting for the election. Having said that, you're not going to get a new deal in March. You're not going to have regular order in March either. So they said, the Senator Cornyn said, maybe it looks like a short-term CR where everyone just keeps paying what they're paying until President Trump comes in January 20th. Would you do that?
I don't think so. I mean, like, once again, so here we are on January 20th. We want to take care of taxes, which I think are important. We want to do regulatory reform, super important. We want to secure the border. I mean, Congress can't tie its own damn shoes, and now you want to add more to the plate? So I'm going, why not now? I'm just – it's all a mess. A lot of this is a mess that we had created ourselves, but it doesn't get any better if you just don't clean the mess up. Like, just – go to work. Like, for once, just sit down, go to work. I don't like shutdowns. Clearly, I don't know how we prevent not going into shutdown. You know, 2 days. I don't know what you pump out in 2 days that's going to pass muster. But, like, let's take this time and almost do it right the first time. Mm. It's not going to get any better in March.
So the big difference is Elon Musk is an outsider who knows how to cut the budget on his companies, even public companies. But I don't think he doesn't have any experience with government. Speaker Johnson's trying to talk to him about what's possible. David Axelrod said this about the dynamic that's emerging. Cut 7.
Everyone who's watching this should strap on their seatbelts, because this is what the next 4 years are going to be like. And Speaker Johnson ought to be strapping on his parachute, because I don't know how he's going to have a narrower margin come January. And, you know, if this is if he's in this kind of jam now, imagine where he's going to be then. I don't know what's going to happen to him.
So I don't think that analysis is off. This is going to be really tough dynamic in the House, Congressman Gonzalez.
It is. But this is how you solve it, Brian. You get back to the way our founding fathers meant for this country to operate. You balance budgets. You have elected officials that have them do their job. I sit on the original DOGE committee. It's called the Appropriations Committee. And guess what? We worked very hard this year to cut all this junk. If I told you all these programs that exist and duplicative and all this DEI, I mean, all this junk. And we cut all that. But guess what? If those bills don't get signed into law, it's as if you did nothing. It didn't really happen. So to me, if you pass your appropriations bills, you get back to regular order, mm-hmm. how the system was meant to work, and guess what? That tackles exactly what Elon and others are saying. You know, why is there a 1,500-page bill in the middle of the night? We got to force ourselves to get back to doing the work that we were intended to do, mm-hmm. not more of the same.
Congressman Gonzalez, it's going to be an interesting, it's going to be an exciting time if you could just find a way to fund the government first so we don't have a shutdown, but we'll see where it goes. Congressman Gonzalez, thanks so much. Merry Christmas. 1-866-408-7669. I'll squeeze in a few calls and some emails. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
What was confusing to me is Musk sends out one of his tweets and he says no one should do anything until January 20th when Trump gets there. Trump sends out a tweet saying they ought to pass a clean CR with a debt ceiling raising the debt ceiling, because as Adam says, he doesn't want to be blamed for it. So they seem to be saying different things, and eventually they're going to have to get together and decide who the president is.
Interesting time. David Axelrod doing some analysis, and it really is. Democrats are total bystanders in this. They waited to the last minute to do what it seems. I don't know if they had a choice. To me, the Speaker of the House, I think, is the best choice to run the Republican Party in a smart is in this majority in the current makeup, because his temperament is perfect. He's liked on both sides of the aisle. Him and Hakeem Jeffries get along. I just think the Thomas Massies of the world and the Rand Pauls are never going to be happy. I think you should bring these guys into leadership and make them take tough decisions. But on the 1,500 plus pages, the Speaker was with the president-elect and Elon Musk all weekend at the Army-Navy game, and they hang out at Mar-a-Lago. Why didn't they break it down? And I asked the Speaker that, too. He goes, no, I did break it down with him, and we went over it again yesterday, and it's just very different. Elon Musk loves deadlines. He likes putting himself in tough situations. The difference is he doesn't own the company. And then people say, well, public companies, you're answering to people. I know, but you're still in control. Nobody knows cars and satellites and rockets and brain chips and tunnels better than Elon Musk. I know it sounds crazy, but he runs all those companies. But here, I don't think he knows the government inside and out yet. And also, you have to deal with somebody else's agenda. You don't have the Senate. You don't have the White House yet. John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, John.
Brian, you're a beautiful sable genius.
Thank you.
Or at least sable. Anyway, hey, I wanted to say real quick that anytime we're talking about the budget or DOGE or any of those things, we've got to put it in context for people and mention that the federal budget at this point, I don't know if you know the number, it's heinous. It's $6.7 trillion. Now, in 2019, I'm just Googling this, it appears to be $4.4 trillion, you know, before COVID came along in 2020. So
we're going up. We're spending way too. We got to stop. You're right. We have to stop spending, and we have to do it in a way. We have to do it in a way that I think one way to do it, the least painful. I don't want to scare 67-year-olds or 77-year-olds and say we're cutting Social Security. But I would like to work in a grandfathered, pun intended, raise of the retirement age, number one. Number two is I think you get these guys in there, Vivek and Elon Musk, to make every one of these departments, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment, all more efficient, all more effective, without cutting back benefits, at the same time being smart about future benefits. And I think you go in there and you talk about when it comes to Social Security, an opportunity that George Bush tried to do and get some private ability to maybe invest some of the money in Social Security that could be coming your direction. But make all these departments more efficient with less people, better software, better systems. That's what these guys are going to be great at. At the same time, being the ones taking the tough decisions, say, I recommend you cut all these other ancillary programs that the federal government doesn't need to do. The state does, or just hire it, handle it in the private sector.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade right here coming from Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world, and as I mentioned over the last few days, I'm just stunned by how crowded everything is. And it's not just with people, it is with families. Real sense of people looking forward to this holiday season, a sense of relief. Now, think about this. I mean, there's a lot of people voted for Trump that are happy. I just think overall, Americans feel like we're going to get on the right track. And that's why I think people feel a little bit more bold. I'm not sure it's being reflected when it comes to Christmas shopping. I don't know that yet. I know the market's been down 9 straight days, so that's not good. And we're going back and forth on inflation. That's not good. But I just know people feel better about the direction of the country. This hour, we're going to be joined by Catherine Boyle, a former Washington Post reporter turned venture capitalist, general partner, and Andreessen Horowitz, and co-founder of the firm's American Dynamism arm, which invests in companies that build and support national interests. So she's going to be talking about what's happening with our military-industrial complex. And Mark Thiessen standing by. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The Trump team coming in has carte blanche to go in and totally change our relationship to our government. And that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I think Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are working toward. Donald Trump is going to do. And it's going to be fundamentally different.
That is Ari Fleischer. Trump transition hitting its stride. And we talk about the sense of optimism. Well, business titans are coming to visit the president, including yesterday, this guy who runs Amazon. He was at Mar-a-Lago.
Number two.
They've been to the complexes. They've said that they've never been under gang control. So it seems like another one of those things that Donald Trump is either exaggerating or making up.
Shame on you, Jared Polis. Your sanctuary policies allowed this.
20 arrested, all with that Venezuelan gang. And the Democratic governor denied it was happening, and we knew it. You lied, Governor Polis. Local officials in Aurora mocked those who, like Vance and Trump, said Aurora is being overrun by transnational legal gangs. After two were tortured, fingernails pulled out by them, another complex taken over, 20 arrested, you should call up Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and apologize.
Number one.
They understand the situation. They said, it's not directed to you, Mr. Speaker, but we don't like the spending. I said, guess what, fellas? I don't either. We got to get this done because here's the key. By doing this, we are clearing the decks and we are setting up for Trump to come in roaring back with the America First agenda.
Blowing up the deal. Elon Musk, President Trump, blow up the budget deal hatched by outgoing leadership as total government shutdown looms. Can it be put back together? Will it cost Speaker Johnson his job? Mark Thiessen joins us now. Mark, I'm going to get to the Ukraine and your brilliant column when you talked about what's really at stake here when President Trump takes over. But just your take on how these things came down yesterday. The speaker says, I got a deal, 1,500 pages, 72 hours to read it. In it is a lot of stuff that could be cut out. Elon Musk says, don't do it. It's a bad deal. Trump says, blow it up. How do you think this is going to be a precursor to what the next 4 years will be like?
Well, first of all, there's no way to get a good bill. You have two options. So the Trump is not president yet. Republicans don't control the Senate yet. So Joe Biden is the president. You have a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate led by Chuck Schumer. They're not going to do Donald Trump's will. So you're not going to get, like, he wants a clean CR with a debt limit increase. There's no way Chuck Schumer is going to give him a debt limit increase for a Christmas present. Why would he? So your choice is a bad bill, and you suck it up, and it's the last gasp of the Biden years, or a clean CR, and then you take care of the debt limit increase with Republican votes only when you come back in January. Those are the choices. There's no in between. There's no way that they're going to get a good bill out of this, and there's no way that the Chuck Schumer is going to give them a debt limit increase. So they're stuck. And so if you don't do a clean CR or a bad bill, then the government shuts down, and then there's no inauguration. You know, and maybe Trump doesn't care, but there will be nobody to put up the stands. There'll be nobody to, you know, there's going to be no parade. There's going to be no, you know, it's just not going to happen. The government's going to be, you want the government shut down during your inauguration. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to accept there are no good choices here. This is they're still in power. They, you know, this is the previous election put them there, and they have this power for a brief period of time. And, you know, Trump can do, you could do a clean CR and then do a debt limit increase when he comes back in, because you can do debt limit increases as part of budget reconciliation. The problem is nobody ever does it during budget reconciliation with just Republican votes or just Democratic votes, because one, they don't want all the blame on one party. And two, you have to put a number on it. You have to say we're raising the debt to X. And so everybody wants to do that with bipartisan support. But, you know, Chuck Schumer then is going to exact a price for that. And so you got to pay the piper. It's just how Washington works. It's the reality of where we are.
Just a quick note, this just breaking. D.A. Fani Willis, an embarrassment to the country and to her city, has been disqualified from the Trump case as they try to figure out if there's a way forward. Yeah. Go get dozens of people, indict them like they're a mob family, and then go have a relationship with the lawyer that you hired who was not qualified. So it worked out well. Yeah. I just feel bad for those other people without the resources who have already cut deals and have had to pay legal fees. So I guess we'll see what happens. I don't want to get sidetracked. So one of the main things that's going to be on President Trump's lap is Ukraine aid. The Russians are doing the best they can to make as much gains as possible before Trump takes over. You point out something that you're especially brilliant at, is what is exactly at stake besides winning and losing with these countries. And that is the natural resources that Ukraine has that the Russians will take if we abandon Ukraine. Can you go through that?
Yeah. So, you know, one of Trump's critiques of the Iraq war was we should have never gone in, but if we did go in, we should have gotten the oil, right? Well, the Ukraine war should have never happened and wouldn't have happened if he was president, but it did. But, you know, why would we want to make the same mistake in Ukraine, which has $26 trillion in natural gas, oil, and minerals? It's a mineral superpower. So just like everybody uses gas for their cars, everyone uses lithium. And lithium ion batteries. It's the largest source of lithium in Europe. It's got the massive amounts of titanium, which is what we use to build planes. It's got all sorts of rare earths that go into cell phones and other technologies. It's one of the richest countries in terms of natural resources. One of the reasons why Putin invaded is he wanted those, right? And so the question becomes, do we want Ukrainian titanium going into American planes? Or do we want it to go into Russian and Chinese fighter jets to threaten us? Do we want Ukrainian lithium to go into Chinese EVs? Or do we want them to go into Teslas? We've spent $183 billion so far defending Ukraine. We deserve a return on that investment. And so the only way you can get a return on that investment is if Ukraine remains an independent country for that Russia and China, its ally China, don't absorb it. And we can develop those natural resources for the benefit of the American people. So this is not a country that we want to fall into the Chinese and Russian orbit.
So what's the reality on the ground right now? It looks like, you know, the energy grid and the Ukrainians are paying a price. But the Russians, they say, estimate have lost 700,000 off the battlefield, dead or wounded. They also cannot get the Ukrainians out of their territory. And even though using North Koreans, it looks like the lack of communication because of the language barrier and experience and coordination. I think a bunch of Ukrainians were victims of a friendly fire from the Russians, and they're also taking heavy casualties. And the North Koreans clearly are there because the Russians are running out of people.
Yep. No, it's exactly right. And I think they've also been using mercenaries from the Middle East as well. The thing is, the Russians don't care about, you know, they'll step over as many bodies as they have to. Putin is not going to give up on Ukraine voluntarily. He's going to have to be stopped. And here's the thing. Donald Trump is right that we got to stop this war. It's got to be stopped in a way that where there are defensive and there's going to have to be some sort of compromise. And I think the Ukrainians understand that they're not going to get all their territory back, but there have to be defensible borders. And it has to be a peace deal that is permanent, that outlasts his presidency, because if we want to develop those natural resources, investors aren't going to go in and invest in Ukraine and bring that titanium to the United States and bring that lithium to the United States and dig it out of the ground if they think that as soon as Trump is gone, the war is going to start again. So we have to have a permanent peace. And this is the other thing, is that we've been given a lot of weapons to Ukraine. We're going to have to keep arming Ukraine regardless of whether the war continues or the negotiations work, because if there's a peace agreement, then Ukraine is going to have to be armed to deter Russia from starting again. It's going to have to be a very well-armed country. So the way to do that is we got to find a way to do that without the American taxpayers subsidizing it. And the way to do that is, one, use the Russian frozen assets in Europe. There's $300 billion worth of Russian frozen assets. Let's use that. So Putin pays for Ukraine's weapons, and America gets the $300 billion to subsidize and strengthen our defense industrial base. And then, two, loans guaranteed by Ukrainian natural resources as collateral. They're a mineral superpower. Mm-hmm. Let's use those minerals as collateral and transition them from an aid recipient to a normal country that buys American weapons using foreign military financing.
And
like
by the
Poland
way,
or the Baltics.
And Mark, as you know, they've begun to make their own weapons and taking money from European allies, especially rather than getting weapons. So it's a good sign. Yep. Here's Donald Trump on Ukraine aid. What he said to Meet the Press.
Should Ukraine prepare for less aid from the United States after you're sworn into office?
Yeah, probably. Sure.
You said you can end the war in 24 hours. You've even said you want to try to end it before you're sworn into office?
I'm trying to end it. I am.
So, I mean, he has Keith Kellogg on it right now, and Kellogg's formed a staff. They said that there's some reports that the Russians are receptive to talks. We'll see if that can get confirmed. President won't confirm whether he's talked to Putin or not. Do you want to shed any light on this?
Well, I don't think that when he says that Ukraine's going to get less aid, I mean, that means U.S. taxpayer money, I think is what he's talking about. I don't think Donald Trump is worried about Ukraine buying weapons from us. Right. I mean, we sell weapons to lots of friendly countries around the world. We sell it to Saudi Arabia. We sell it to the UAE. We sell it to Poland. We sell it to Germany. We sell it to Britain. You know, we sell it to all our NATO allies. I don't think he's against selling weapons to Ukraine in order for them to defend themselves. I just think at some point we had to come in and save the country because they were under attack. And now the situation is stabilized. He's going to have a peace deal. We're going to have to arm them, but we have to arm them in a way that we arm lots of other countries around the world by letting them buy our weapons. The Russians are only going to come to the table because they can't win. And so I don't think the Ukrainians are the ones who are going to hold out. It's going to be the Russians who may hold out. And then Trump has said if the Russians don't come to the table and negotiate, then he's going to increase arms to Ukraine. And he's right. And he also said in his interview with Time Magazine for the Person of the Year award, he said he won't abandon Ukraine because I can't get a peace deal if I abandon Ukraine. So Putin's got these dreams that Trump is going to come in and abandon Zelensky. First of all, Zelensky didn't abandon him during the impeachment. So I think he's going to return the favor. But two, he understands leverage. There's never been a president who understands leverage better than Donald Trump. And he understands that if he were to abandon Ukraine, he would lose all of his leverage with Putin to get a good peace deal.
So Keith Kellogg was on yesterday. He's going to be on with us tomorrow. He's in charge of working something out. So he's a lieutenant general. And about the assassination of that general in Moscow a couple of days ago, this is what he said.
I don't think it's really a setback, but I would say this. There are rules of warfare, and there are certain things you just kind of don't do. You know, for example, you don't kill wounded soldiers on the battlefield. You're not supposed to kill non-combatants. When you're killing flag officers, general officers, admirals or generals in their hometown, it's kind of like you kind of extended it, and I don't think it's really smart to do it. You know, it's just not kind of the rules of war, as you said. Now, if you're a general officer and you're on the battlefield or you're forward, you're a legitimate target. But I kind of looked at that and I said, yeah, that's carrying a little bit too far. You know?
Your thoughts?
So I generally agree with Keith on these things, and I'll defer to him on that that specific incident. But as a general rule, look, the Russians have been targeting Ukraine from Russian territory. So that means Russian territory is fair game. And so, you know, why is Russia allowed to bomb Kyiv and kill civilians and bomb schools and bomb hospitals and do the rest of it and Moscow's off limits? If you're starting a war, if you start a war and you are massacring innocent men, women, and children, and bombing
with chemicals, by the way,
then I'm sorry, but Russians shouldn't feel safe in Moscow. And I think it's quite frankly, the Ukrainians are not doing what the Russians are doing. They targeted a military target. He's a commander who's involved in the fight in Ukraine. He just happened to be back in Moscow. I think it's great that they can reach into Moscow and make them be afraid in their own capital. They should be.
I'm already late, but I want to talk about Syria if I can. It's really important that the Russians are bracketed out of their bases. They're trying to get talks going with this new regime, whoever they are. They look to be more Salafist Sunnis who tend to be terrorists. Having said that, the Russians don't care. They want to keep their bases. What should we be doing to make sure? Can we do anything to make sure the Russians' presence in Syria dissipates?
Well, I think we should be talking to the new government and see if they're willing to. You know, I think we are, and being in conversation with them and see whether they're willing to be reasonable or not. I think we should give them every chance to behave as a reasonable government. And part of the price of that should be getting the Russian bases out of there. But look, this is a huge defeat for Moscow. It's not just a defeat for Iran. Moscow came in to save the Syrian regime, and they failed entirely. And the reason they failed was because they got distracted by Ukraine, by this terrible expedition in Ukraine, and they didn't have the military resources to do both. And so they lost. So they, I think they should be leaving Syria with their tail between their legs.
I hope so, too. I hope the American focus would be on that, because not having them there stops the land bridge from Iran to get to send drones to Russia. It stops the Russians from getting weapons to the Houthi rebels. And Hezbollah can't get rearmed, too. So this could be a huge boon. Who would have thought, Mark Thiessen? Hopefully President reads your column. We'll talk about it on TV. Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, I know. He deserves so much credit. Mark Thiessen, Washington Post, you're the best. Have a great Christmas, Mark.
Thank you. Take care. You too. Bye.
Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we're back. I went a little long with Mark, but he's just really forward thinking. I mean, really, Mark is someone who doesn't say, well, that's what's going on. Here's my opinion. He always gets facts. And this is why Ukraine matters. For people who roll their eyes and say, we don't care about foreign wars. Just keep in mind, you're going to give one of our enemies all the natural resources that Ukraine has, make them more vulnerable, cost us more money, more troops in the region, worry about Germany and all these things. Think about it. $26 trillion worth of gas and minerals. You go in there and you say, hey, I'll take a percentage of that. If you can help, and I'm sure Ukraine is into this. This is not extortion. Ukraine says, sure, take a portion. Help the technology to get it out of the ground. And you know we're hard workers and we know how to fight. Just don't abandon us now. So I think it's a great point that he brought up. So coming up next, Catherine Boyle, to give us an inside look at what's going on in the world. We're talking about investments. We're talking about building an American industrial base. And also when you talk about Doge and all these things with business and politics and government, she's also invaluable there. Then we'll take your calls at 1-866-408-7669. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're getting closer to Christmas. You really should start shopping, I think, anyway.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Let's talk a little bit about our economy, our military industrial base, and what we need to secure ourselves when it comes to chip manufacturing, because Taiwan's, I guess, security is always being threatened, and we have to stand behind them. But that's a separate issue. In the meantime, how do we become more self-sufficient? China clearly got that message. Catherine Boyle joins us now, a former Washington Post reporter turned venture capitalist, a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz, and the co-founder of the firm's American Dynamism arm, which invests in companies that build to support national interests. Catherine, welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Brian, it's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Catherine, in particular, tell everyone what your focus is now, because I think one of the main things our country needs is to expand the military industrial base. We've learned since Eisenhower to fear it. There's nothing to fear right now. It's too small. That's what I fear.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. So we founded the American Dynamism Practice at Andreessen Horowitz 3 years ago, and we defined it as companies that are actively supporting the national interest. It's a broad category of companies, but aerospace, defense, national security is a huge part of it. And this is a story of what has been happening in Silicon Valley for the last 10 years. It started with SpaceX. Frankly, it started with Elon Musk saying our aerospace, NASA is not capable of doing the things that it needs to do, building companies with private capital so that we can build reusable rockets, build products that are really important for the national industrial base. And one of the things that we've seen in the last few years is founders in Silicon Valley want to build and support their country by building companies that work with the DoD. And so there's a lot of work to be done, but the most important thing we're seeing is these companies are building better, faster, and cheaper. And the cheaper component of this is what I think we're going to see in the next few years of the next administration.
So, there was a worry around the Bush era, the second term, when Google and other firms said, Apple, I don't want to be associated with American military. I want to be what they thought was politically correct or separate. They didn't care about investing in China. You think there's been a change of thought in that way?
Absolutely. So it actually goes back to 2017, which was the sort of peak point where Google, one of the most successful American companies, a lot of their engineers, or a small portion actually, it was probably, a thousand or so, signed a letter saying, we do not want to work with the Department of Defense. We do not want to work on important things that can protect the warfighter. And that led to, I would say, an outcry among a small portion of people in Silicon Valley. It actually led to the founding of a company called Anduril, which I would argue is the next SpaceX, but for the Department of Defense. And the Palmer Luckey, who was the founder of Oculus, he had been, fired from Facebook. He said, I want to build a company that creates products better, faster, and cheaper for the warfighter. And I'm going to aggregate the talent that cares about defense in Silicon Valley and build a new company in the likes of SpaceX. And what has happened in the last 7 years, and particularly since COVID, the war in Ukraine, young engineers who frankly don't even remember September 11th, that some of them weren't even born or they were young, they realize the importance of defense technology now. They realize that it's not a theoretical thing that we could be in a war with China. They realize we have to build better defense systems for the U.S. military, and they are building them. So I always say we sort of did a 180 in Silicon Valley where, in 2017, people said, I'm terrified to invest in defense. And it was very controversial. It is now the most, I would say, the most hyped, the hottest sector in Silicon Valley to invest in. And young founders are saying, I want to support my country. And I think it's a wonderful thing. It's going to have incredible benefits across the U.S. And it's particularly going to help the warfighter.
And so, Catherine, is your company picking and choosing where to invest? Who's got the most promise? And it's for profit. And I'm for that. I mean, you got to put the profit into this to get the innovation necessary to be successful in this.
Yes. So, I mean, one of the things about American dynamism is America has something that no other country in the world has. And we have a system of risk capital where people are willing to put capital into young, brilliant minds. Many of these kids are just coming out of college, or they went to the best engineering schools, or they went to the University of Elon Musk, worked at SpaceX for a couple years, and they say, now I want to build a hypersonics company. Now I want to build a drone company. And they get together with their friends and they build a company. And my role as a venture capitalist is to give them capital, to have them move as fast as possible, to iterate and do the research and development that frankly isn't being done at the large prime contractors anymore. When you look at the large public companies, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, they are not doing the research and development that incorporates artificial intelligence, that incorporates the bleeding edge of what we need to do to defeat China. And so what is happening is Silicon Valley has really taken on that research and development role for the country. And we are helping to build these products, to finance these products. Now, some companies are going to fail, and that's okay. Our system is developed to let companies fail, but a lot of these new companies are going to succeed, and they are going to be the companies that really protect the warfighter in the coming years, in the coming theaters, and hopefully prevent war through deterrence.
Wow. I mean, that's certainly encouraging. Now, from what you had to talk to Joe Lonsdale, too, for a while, he said that when I first brought up the fact that, Elon Musk is going to get in there and people want to help out. But do they really know how government works? And he says they're perfect because they know exactly how it works from the outside and the frustrations that private contractors feel in dealing with the government. And then people will come forward in the Pentagon and say, I'm as frustrated as you are. Certain people don't do certain things. So maybe the outsiders are perfectly built. So it's broadly, when you come up with these innovative techniques, the R&D necessary, do you find a open and coachable Pentagon on the other side that is open to this innovation?
Yeah, I think what you said is very important. A lot of the people on the inside are just as frustrated as the American taxpayer is, as the people who are working with the Department of Defense. They often say, they can't say things on the outside, but we can be their megaphone. And so I think there's a lot of people inside the Department of Defense who've been pounding the drum saying, we need to change our defense industrial base. We need to invest in cutting edge technologies. We need to take advantage of this $40, $50 billion subsidy from venture capital every year that goes to the Department of Defense through investment. So as Joe said, as you mentioned, these are companies that and people that really understand how the government works. But to your point, I think it takes outsiders to really push meaningful change. And so, as you said, with Elon Musk and others who know how to sell and to the Department of Defense, who know what it's like on the outside, they can bring a really thoughtful perspective because they haven't worked inside of Washington for 30 years. They understand what the problems are with an outsider's perspective.
So Mark Andreessen, your partner, was on with Joe Rogan. He said this about AI and the current administration, which in my view can't leave quick enough. Cut 35.
The AI thing was very alarming. We had meetings this spring that were the most alarming meetings I've ever been in, where they were taking us through their plans, and it was
like, no. What kind of, can you talk about it?
Basically, just full government control, like this sort of thing. There will be a small number of large companies that will be completely regulated and controlled by the government. They told us. They just said, don't even start startups. Like, don't even bother. Like, there's just no way. There's no way that they can succeed. There's no way that we're going to permit that to happen.
Wow.
Yeah. They just said, this is already over. It's going to be two or three companies, and we're going to control them, and that's that. Like, this is already finished.
Oh my God. Yeah. Now, when you leave a meeting like that, what do?
You go endorse Donald Trump.
So, I guess that's not news to you. It's probably news to our audience. So that was the feeling. We're so worried about AI, or we want to control AI, or they tend to be more conservative than the social media companies. What are your thoughts about what Mark said?
Well, no, I mean, it was very worrying, because the truth is that the thing that keeps the American economy, the best economy in the world, is American dynamism and our competition. So the role of a venture capitalist is to invest in small companies that compete with big tech, that compete with the big companies, and to force them to change. You know, we like to see little tech, we call it, become big tech, and then we keep investing in little tech. And this is the cycle of innovation, that brings us the next great app on our iPhone, or that brings us a reusable rocket, is small companies competing with large companies. And so when the government says, actually, no, we're going to engage in regulatory capture, and we're going to stop all the innovation of the little tech and just let the big guys do what they want to do, that is really bad for the American consumer. It is really bad for the American taxpayer when it comes to defense and anything related to selling to government. And so it was very concerning for us. And I think Mark said it beautifully. You know, it is the cycle of innovation that keeps this country going, and we have to continue investing in it.
And by the way, we're talking to Catherine Boyle, who's at the cutting edge of all this innovation. So Catherine, do you think, and in talking to Mark, it was because people are so worried about what AI could do, start thinking on its own and reduce the capacity for humans to play a role in our lives? Because I watched David Altman's interview two, three years ago on ABC, and he said, I'm a little scared of this. Do you think it's from a safety standpoint, or is it from a government should control everything standpoint?
So I think the sort of naive or the sort of optimistic view would be that because it's a new technology and we don't know, that a lot of people are open to sort of those, you know, maybe it's very scary but I'd say, like, the sort of realist perspective is that government engages in regulatory capture very often. Businesses engage in regulatory capture very often, where they don't like young companies or other companies to come in and try to compete. And we know that the best part about American capitalism is competition. And so having the government overregulate new technologies actually leads to the big tech cartels that we've seen in previous years, where they get too much power. And so we're a huge believer in little tech. We're a huge believer in companies that compete against the larger companies and force them to innovate, force them to provide services to the American consumer. And if you cut off those companies because something scary might happen, you know, that is exactly what regulatory capture is. There's many examples in history of when we've done that to innovative markets and squashed innovation. So we can't do it to AI.
So, Catherine, we know that China's not slowing down. They don't care. And they love the fact that maybe the government here will try to slow them down. Here's what the former Google CEO, Eric Schmidt, said. He has a book out. He doesn't feel like he should go on Fox. I don't know why. Here's what he said about China.
Well, I used to think we were a couple of years ahead of China, but China has caught up in the last 6 months in a way that is remarkable. The fact of the matter is that a couple of the Chinese programs, one, for example, is called DeepSeek, looks like they've caught up. And this is even after these extraordinary efforts by the Trump and Biden administration to withhold high-powered chips. The Chinese are clever, and they understand the power of a new kind of intelligence for their industrial might, their military might, and their surveillance system.
Hmm. So did you know that? You concur?
I think it's interesting. He said the Chinese are clever. I'll say it more clearly. The Chinese are very good at IP theft and have been for the last 30 years. It's particularly in Silicon Valley. And so anything that we do, it certainly makes its way over there a few weeks or a few months later. And so we have to constantly be moving faster. That will always be the story of our relationship with the U.S. and China, is that they will steal our IP. And so the scary thing to me is when you have people saying, well, let's put a 6-month pause, or let's engage in regulatory practices that slow the innovation in the U.S. Yes, they will catch up. And that's what we had with the previous administration that very much wanted to make sure that open source AI and open source technology was not engaging in the conversation, was not able to build. And we very much need an innovative ecosystem around AI to make sure that we outpace China.
So, you know, why do you think he said clever? Why didn't he just say steal? Is he worried about some China investments?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. You know, maybe he was just being polite, or you know, but I do think that there is definitely. I mean, we are in an arms race with AI. Like this is a very serious moment, and it's not just AI that exists on our phones. It's not just going to improve the lives of consumer. It is an arms race, a literal arms race for the Department of Defense. And so we have to be engaging with the best technologists in America. We have to make sure that we fast track these technologies into the Department of Defense, because China has no qualms. Yeah. About telling its best engineers, you will work on this product and you will support the government. And we need to make sure that we encourage the same behavior in the U.S.
So let's talk about this plant that's being built. The Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company is building a plant in Arizona. Is this through the CHIPS Act? Why should we care about this?
Yeah, so I think it is very important. And yes, you know, some of it is through the CHIPS Act. Some of it is through sort of, you know, there's a massive opportunity. But I also think like the thing that we have to understand is that reindustrialization in this country is the most important thing that we can focus on in this administration in terms of technology. Ensuring that we have a strong manufacturing base, ensuring that the defense industrial base is not aging people who you know have no one to take over their plants or no one to take over their machine shops because there isn't enough talent. We have to make sure that we're investing in reindustrialization. And it's not just making sure that great companies come and build in the US, it's investing in talent. It's making sure that the next generation of machinists, of manufacturers really understand how to work with software, with AI to produce products faster, that there is a push to build these kinds of companies, not only in the defense industrial base, but across the entire industry, American industry. So I think this is an important policy initiative, and it's not just focusing on bringing companies back or investment, at a top-down perspective, but also making sure it's bottoms-up that we are training the next generation of manufacturer in this country.
So keep your eye on that, because Taiwan has most of the chip factories there, and if they're taken over by China, the whole world security is really in the balance. But the other thing is, I heard with the CHIP Act, there's so many strings attached. You have to have a certain amount of gender and ethnicity and sexual choice. And that people say, you know, I don't know if it's really worth it. Have you heard that?
So there have been reports that have said there's a lot of strings attached, or that and that's kind of, I'd say, the way that kind of Washington often works, right? When you have a bill or an idea, a lot of different DEI initiatives get attached to it. And I do think like that is something when you look at what Doge has been talking about in recent days and what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy have been looking at, making sure that the initiatives that are good ideas actually be brought to the forefront without all of the bells and whistles and the pork and the things that are attached to it that dilute a good initiative. And so I do think that this will be an administration, particularly when you look at the Doge Commission, really focuses on streamlining good ideas and making sure that we can implement them and actually see results.
How do you feel about this cryptocurrency? AI czar, David Katz. Do you think he understands it?
Absolutely. So David Sachs, we've known David Sachs for a very long time in Silicon Valley. He is a fantastic builder, a fantastic investor. And what I'll say about him was that he was part of the original PayPal mafia, which was founded in the late 90s. So he has been building companies in Silicon Valley for his entire career. He's, a dear friend of Elon Musk. He's been an investor in SpaceX since the inception. And so he understands what great companies look like. He understands cutting edge technology. And what's different about having someone like David Sachs involved versus lots of people before who've, worked in academia, or maybe they're theorists and they've written books, is he actually understands how to get his hands dirty and build a company. Right. We don't have that history of people like that going into government, people who are really doers and not talkers.
You're pumped up. I could see it, Catherine. You're pumped up. And I met David for the first time over the weekend at the Army-Navy game and talked to him for a while. Very impressive. And I know he's pumped. Catherine, I hope we could do this a lot. You're so impressive. And best of luck. I'm so glad you're doing this for the country and you're a part of this, because we need all hands on deck right now. The challenges are great. Catherine Boyle, thank you. Back in a moment.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You got it.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The founding fathers divided power up, and when you can make speeches all you want, you got to get the votes. President Trump and Ramaswamy and Musk and others are going to have to go and work the Republican conference, get them to understand they need 100% on every key vote, period. And that's just the price of doing it. And then strip out all the garbage.
Newt Gingrich trying to get some coaching available for Speaker Johnson and Kevin McCarthy, and Newt Gingrich, the most experienced, and John Boehner, but he's kind of out of it. Not out of it. He's fine. He just is not involved in the political process now. About what you need in order to get a raucous caucus like the one the Republicans are dealing with now, with the slimmest margin in maybe in American history, especially now in this period where you really are in the minority because you don't have the Senate, you don't have the White House. So Newt's saying this is what you have to do. Elon Musk and President Trump coming out and saying, I'm so glad the American people won by killing that 5,000-page bill. The problem is the government's going to shut down and shortly if they don't come up with an alternative. I don't know if it's possible, but Newt Gingrich says most importantly, the whole caucus has to vote together. That's you, Tom Massey, and others who like to do things your own way. That's you, Freedom Caucus.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's getting closer to Christmas, I know, and closer and closer to a government shutdown. And I know many of you will be thinking to yourself, well, we've heard this before, but I think this time is different. And where's the President of the United States? Well, on Wednesday, he went to Delaware because he can't retire quick enough. Have you noticed all the stories now about Joe Biden not having the energy behind the scenes, the staff covering for him? The Wall Street Journal writes today, and they were one of the first to write about it. We've been talking about it on this show and on the network. He's not functioning well. He doesn't do any press conferences. He's angry all the time. What does he do? Where's his policies? You know, where's his programs? Why is he running for re-election? We were questioning it. Now everybody's questioning it. Now they're saying behind the scenes he doesn't really get engaged. They don't tell him a lot. Scary. I mean, we have to reevaluate when a president is in office. We have to make sure he's functioning or she is functioning in the future. Adam Gilletta is going to join us, GOP strategist, president of Accuracy and Media. And Adam's really good. I want to get a real sense on what's happening in the media. Have you noticed the change in not only how they're covering Trump, but have you noticed, too, what's going on? I mean, the defamation suit against ABC. Now we learn that George Stephanopoulos was warned, don't call Donald Trump a rapist. He is not convicted of rape. And he said it multiple times to Nancy Mace to get under her skin. I'm not going to play it again. But it's an example of these people are so deranged, like Stephen Colbert, like Jimmy Kimmel, who pretend to be comedians, so deranged with anti-Trumpism that they can't even be somewhat balanced. They're just breathing anger. So they don't even want to report the issue that January 6th, this, and Donald Trump got impeached, and he's a liar, and he's a convicted felon, whatever. We're so past that, and we don't get it. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
The Trump team coming in has carte blanche to go in and totally change our relationship to our government. And that's what I'm looking forward to. That's what I think Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk are working toward. Donald Trump is going to do. And it's going to be fundamentally different.
That is Ari Fleischer, a media analyst, too, and he understands communications, and he noticed it, too. The Trump transition team is hitting its stride. We talk about the sense of optimism. Another big business titan goes to hail the chief at Mar-a-Lago.
Number two.
They've been to the complexes. They've said that they've never been under gang control. So it seems like another one of those things that Donald Trump is either exaggerating or making up.
Shame on you, Jared Polis. Your sanctuary policies allowed this.
It is true. And that is the governor of Colorado. He lied. Governor Polis, local officials in Aurora mocked Donald Trump, mocked J.D. Vance, and said there was no problem with Venezuelan gangs in Aurora. 20 arrested, 2 people tortured, nails pulled out by alien gangs taking over apartment complexes. And the governor had to have known it and just did not want to give Donald Trump the win. Ultimately, he got it anyway because the people believed what they were seeing on video.
Number one.
They understand the situation. They said, it's not directed to you, Mr. Speaker, but we don't like the spending. I said, guess what, fellas? I don't either. We got to get this done because here's the key. By doing this, we are clearing the decks and we are setting up for Trump to come in roaring back with the America First agenda.
And that is Speaker Johnson. His plan has blown up. And Elon Musk and President Trump really did it. The budget deal was hatcheted, was hatched behind closed doors. I think it was too secret, although I hear from the speaker that he was keeping Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy informed. Can it be put back together? Will it cost the speaker his job? I hope not. He's the best answer also. So Elon Musk is hailing the end. Elon Musk is hailing the end of the deal. I'm not. I do think people should understand Donald Trump's not president yet. The Senate is not in Republican hands yet. So what do you expect him to do? But they could have done, I mean, it's 5,000 pages. I could point out some stuff that is disturbing in it. But the reason why that stuff is in it is because they wanted to get emergency aid to FEMA as well as, and Democrats should too, but evidently it became a Republican mission. The North Carolina and Florida from the natural, and Virginia from the natural disasters, those hurricanes that slammed into them before. And what they did is get funding on various projects like Farm Aid. Farmers tend to vote for Republicans, and they definitely have a suffering under Joe Biden's policies. So in the bill, that's bothering people, and it should bother you too. Spending $3 million to test the inspection of molasses, the Global Engagement Center, which is like a Hillary Clinton center, extending a sheep marketing grant program for, 2025 costs money, a feral spine eradication program. I don't know. Do I have to pay for that? The federal government paying the entire bill to rebuild the Francis Scott Key Bridge. That's a Maryland issue. So all these, that's what Democrats wanted. So Musk came in and said, don't do this. Trump said, you better not do it. And I don't want to deal with the debt ceiling in June. So get rid of the debt ceiling. I don't think the speaker or anybody else has that leverage. So Senator J.D. Vance, who will be the vice president shortly, went in and for about 90 minutes met with the speaker, who talked also with Elon Musk, the president of the United States, and others. But they have not talked to Democrats about what needs to be done. So here is Senator John Kennedy and what he recommends. Cut three.
Here's what I'd do. First, I would tell everybody to take their meds. Number two, I think President Trump is going to have to consider coming to Washington. Let's face it, he's the president now. It's not President Biden. President Trump needs to sit down with Mike Johnson and John Thune and come up with a new skinny CR. If the president wants to do something on the debt limit, we need to find out what it is and put it in the bill. And then the president's going to have to help Mike sell it in the House.
Yeah, and he's the only one that can do it. I mean, people who are very bright, they just don't want to sign on to anything. Just not practical. I just don't understand. Has anyone been on the team sport? Yeah, those things bother me. But I also know Trump's coming in, and there's going to be a plan going forward. You just don't have the deal yet. It's like trying to win a game without being in the regular season. The game's got to start first. I can't win a game without playing. And I can't get in the game with the team I want because they don't start till January 20th. I really like that analogy. I stumbled onto it. I'm going to hold on to it. So Akeem Jeffries can't believe it. We're back to the Republican Raucous Caucus. Cut six.
House Republicans have now unilaterally decided to break a bipartisan agreement that they made. House Republicans have been ordered to shut down the government and hurt everyday Americans all across this country. House Republicans will now own any harm that is visited upon the American people that results from a government shutdown or worse. An agreement is an agreement. It was bipartisan, and there is nothing more to say.
So they're not been dealt in yet. I hope they get this thing worked out. I don't want to see a government shut down. I don't want to hear the drama. It is so frustrating. So we'll see. Elon Musk says, I know what he's great at, streamlining the budget, fixing manufacturing, making things more efficient. And I know it's eventually going to work for this government, but I just don't think at this time they do. Next, I want to talk about illegal immigration. As I mentioned in the open, 20 arrested in Aurora, Colorado. Aurora? I thought there was no problem in Aurora, Colorado with Venezuelan international gangs. It is just one apartment complex or two. What's the big deal? We were told. When local officials spoke up, they were told to pipe down. When sheriffs were told, were asked about it, they said it's no big deal. The new sheriff, he's got a huge problem with it. He said in September, he tasked the federal government, we got illegals here, criminals, help us. And their answer was, well, when they get across the border, they're no longer our problem. Really? That's essentially what Mayor Adams heard in New York City. So remember when Jared Polis said this, when Donald Trump said Aurora has been taken over by illegals. Cut 10.
But the police, the mayor, continue to reassure us. And, of course, they've had a number of events. They've been to the complexes. They've said that they've never been under gang control. So it seems like another one of those things that Donald Trump is either exaggerating or making up.
Making up, exaggerated, really? You didn't have your nails pulled out yesterday, did you? I'm sorry. That was a woman who happened to live there and spoke up and was kidnapped and tortured along with, I think, is her boyfriend. So Danielle Jerninski is an Aurora councilwoman. Cut 11.
What would you say to the governor today, Danielle?
I would say shame on you. And you talk about a feature of my imagination. Well, if my imagination runs wild enough to come up with my worst nightmare, then that's where we're at. And shame on you, Jared Polis. Your sanctuary policies allowed this. And then you want to talk about my imagination. Shame.
Yeah. Can you feel it? I mean, can you imagine that? Is it someone you know? And basically, when the building manager came in to say, hey, guys, you don't live here, get out. They were essentially threatened, if you come back again, I'll wipe out your family. Okay. That's fine. In America. And when the aspiring vice president speaks up, he gets shot down. I'm not going to play it. I played it enough on Martha Raddatz Exchange, but you could get that online. It's everywhere. So there's a problem. There's a problem here with gangs. There's a problem in 20 separate states, not just in big cities. You can't escape it. That's why Tom Holman is doing the work of the country, not just the new president. Mayor Eric Adams sat down on Fox for the first time, and he did an interview with Martha McCallum. And talked about how when he spoke up about the cost of international of illegal immigrants on his city, the White House shut him down. Cut 16.
When this issue happened and we asked for assistance over and over again, and I refused to remain silent while I was watching this city harm, we no longer received the support that we deserved. We no longer had an opportunity to communicate with the president. It was a clear statement from the White House that they didn't appear to be happy that I was standing up for the city. And other mayors should do that. Look at what happened in these other cities, Chicago, Denver, Los Angeles, Houston. Cities should not be taking away the resources from their residents to handle a national crisis.
I want to play another cut from Mayor Adams, but I do want to go back and just finish off Aurora. Just so you know, it's not just Trump. It's not just Governor Polis. Everybody was pushing back on this story. And I wonder, and I'm like, is this going to be one of those dogs and cats things where maybe the video doesn't tell the story? We were misled, but it didn't. It held up. And I remember these headlines, ABC, October 13th. Vance stands by Trump's false claims about Venezuelan gangs in Aurora. Washington Post, October 11th. Trump campaigns in Aurora, site of false claims about the gangs. New York Times, September 15th. How the full story of a gang takeover in Colorado reaches Trump. And remember when the Democratic governor said what he said. So that's why people and a lot of the major newspapers and organizations said, we told you how bad Trump was, and you still voted for him, and now you gave him the popular vote. What's going on? Because no one believes you anymore. So Adams has gone on. And look, he has very few options. They're blocking any... they're blocking him from any matching campaign funds as he tries to run for re-election. They do have him accusing of doing things on multiple accounts with Turkey and other people for influence. I read it. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal to take down a Democratic mayor. Is he just too conservative? I don't get it. So from what I've seen so far, he's not in good legal stead. A lot of his people are cutting deals and they're indicting him, and it doesn't look good. And people who know him say that, Brian, don't buy into it. Mayor Adams is all talk. But so far, he might be in a situation where maybe he was all talk in the past. But if he wants to win over the current president, who could pardon him if he knows he's done things wrong, I'm fine with it. Well, however things get done. So he talked about, Mayor Eric Adams did, about his conversation with Tom Holman. Got 18.
I thought our conversation was a great conversation. Tom and I both sat down, and we both agree on violent individuals should not remain in our country. We have laws here in the city on how that could be handled. My legal team is going to sit down with his legal team to make the determination if an executive order can change that. One of the things he would like to have is that's access to Rikers Island. That's the jail in our city. The law that was passed under the previous administration said that no ICE officer can be in any governmental building. There are exceptions to that. We're looking at those exceptions. That's my core issue.
So, do you believe this? I mean, who would pass a law except for Mayor de Blasio? What a clown. To make sure that ICE doesn't grab criminals who are at Rikers Island, one of the most horrific prisons around, who are costly, by the way, and ICE doesn't have access to criminals to send them back to their country or put them in an ICE facility because they're highly dangerous. You want your own criminals in your city. It's crazy. It's crazy. But what is a sanctuary city? What was it intended to do? It was intended to do this. So if I'm an illegal immigrant and I'm living, let's say, in Manhattan, and I'm here for 12, 13 years, I got a couple of jobs, I'm making ends meet, my kids were born here, and all of a sudden I'm a victim of a crime. I have to go, if I go to the cops, I can't really go to the cops, an illegal immigrant. So what they did is, I want you to be a sanctuary city. Yeah, don't worry about your immigration status. You're a citizen, you pay, you're not a citizen, you pay taxes. You should be able to go and talk, and be able to fulfill a prescription, and you should be able to go to the local authorities. That's what it was intended to do, but now it's being abused. So I'll take a timeout, come back. We'll talk more about this, and also we'll talk about the change in tone with the media, with the president of Accuracy in Media, Adam Gillette. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
They're getting all of our resources, all the American people in Chicago. Brandon Johnson has given these illegal immigrants over, you know, $500 million while American people struggle and starve on the street. But not only that, now he wants to protect these illegals that's here in Chicago, Illinois, illegally. And I just don't believe that's the right thing to do as a mayor when you have a 14% approval rating. And then the people realize why our city is so bad. It's because they keep voting Democrat.
And not only that, extremist Democrats. I don't really go inside Chicago politics. Most of you don't either. But they were in a jungle primary, means, you know, Democrat against Democrats, Republican, Independents, Libertarians, doesn't matter. And the guy that was first was pro-cop Democrat, pro-cop, kind of moderate. And then they go to a jungle primary where they eliminate everyone except the top two. And this guy, the mayor that won, Johnson, was ends up winning. So then he gets in there and he's just a radical right. This makes the other one look like a moderate. And she's out of her mind, totally over our skis. One who wanted to get her hair done because during the pandemic, because people of Chicago want to be proud of their mayor and they got to look hot. Of course, I always said that during a pandemic, it's time to look your best. So this is widespread. There's going to be so much pressure. Tom Homan's coming right into Chicago. There's going to be so much pressure on them to do something. But this guy's not going to budge. I don't know if there's a recall on mayors, but or the city council can just toss him out or they feel as left as him. But he's going to be scooping people right off the streets. He's going to be banging on the doors. And they say there's a you are violating the law if you are harboring a fugitive. And if the ICE officials say that there's a fugitive behind or kept in jail or put in a prison and you do not give access, you could be arrested. And maybe people, if you want to lawyer up, Mr. Mayor, you can go lawyer up because the American people are not behind the sanctuary status that shields criminals from being deported. Does any American feel that way ever, costing us billions of dollars? I'm getting encouraged, too, that we're going to crack down on the border. We're getting to the bottom of the selling off of the fence, pure vindictiveness by President Biden against Trump, selling it at an auction house. Well, they pursued it, they found it, and it's been pulled off the auction. And they're going to find out how much of it is usable, but it's go with it. Where there is left is going to go up right on the border of in Arizona where it is right now. And whatever is left, Texas says, if there's anything left, we're going to win the bid if it goes up for auction again. Hold on tight until January 20th, America.
the fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Welcome as we get closer and closer to Christmas. There's a couple of things. There's so much going on. But the one thing that struck us, and it's one of the big three today, is just the different tone in which the media is covering Trump. Even now, when Trump weighs in, Elon Musk weighs in and blows up this this interim spending deal, instead of just saying Donald Trump's a horrible person, doesn't know what he's doing, and he's cutting the knees out of his own party, they're doing analysis more than ever. And this new fair way of dealing with Trump for now is something that I think is very noteworthy, especially some of his victories. In case you do not know, Fannie Willis has been pulled off the case. Remember the Georgia case saying that he was trying to manipulate the outcome of an election in that state in 2020? She's out. The only case that's in hyperspace now is the one in New York. So he's done with that. That's a victory. And he also got another major victory. ABC acquiesced and paid out Trump $15 million for defamation when they said he wrongly called him a rapist, which, by the way, calling him a rapist is wrong. And then we find out today one of the reasons they settled, Stephanopoulos was warned by multiple people not to call the former president a rapist, and he did twice. They knew they were going to go down, and that's why they cut the deal. Adam Gullett joins us now, GOP strategist and president of Accuracy in Media. Adam, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
See you on the channel, man. You have a lot of energy.
You're very kind. You need it when you're getting chased by radicals who want to kill you all the time.
Right, because you chased them to begin with.
Well,
they might chase
fair.
You back.
That's fair.
But one of the things, have you noticed the difference in tone?
Absolutely, but it's a tricky environment. Of course they're going to be nice to him now because they know their audience is going to be low for the next few months till things ramp up again. So they use this as their opportunity to show, no, we're actual journalists. We're just doing our job, when no one's actually listening to them anyway.
Do you believe that maybe they got a wake-up call when the American people gave them the popular vote? Every battleground state, they tried to indict him, and everything that we've already been through. Do you think they might have sat there when the doors closed and the music is gone and they know they're not being followed or text and said, we got this wrong?
Call me a cynic. I would love to believe that. Nothing would be better than to believe that we now have mainstream media that tells stories down the middle, that analyzes facts and reports the information. That's not what we have. It's an echo chamber. It's a fragmented media landscape, and they only get ratings and readers by telling their audiences what they want to hear. So pretty quickly, when things ramp up in the new year, I think you're going to unfortunately see that end.
Right. The president of the United States seems different, doesn't he?
Definitely
president-elect.
Yes, correct.
In what way do you pick up on it? In what way do you think?
Well, I think he seems more measured than he did 8 years ago. His appointees are far better than what we saw 8 years ago. He's kind of more relaxed. I think he's in control of himself a bit better. You know, for so long, I think we've all felt like the greatest enemy he had was himself. It was only he who could stop him, which happened from time to time. And I think to a degree, he's learned from that. And the cabinet appointees are, I think, a reflection of it.
So I also think comparing him to the person we had, he was supposed to bring normalcy back. He disappeared. We know physically he deteriorated. We know he was in denial about it, but he was not accessible. And I thought Stephanie Ruhle of MSNBC, of all places, said this on a podcast about the difference. Listen.
The day after Donald Trump had that crazy rally at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I rolled the dice and I called him on the phone and he answered. Obviously, he said no. But my point is, yeah, I was able to get to him by dialing his phone. If I were to want to connect
right
with VP Harris or President Biden, there's 50 people mm-hmm between me and that. I could write a note that maybe could get to somebody to get somebody, then through Pony Express and a pigeon, something
so
might end up in a mailbox.
He's pointing out the difference on an MSNBC primetime anchor. It's true, isn't it? The accessibility was totally underappreciated.
Well, it's not just that Trump is accessible, which he is. He'll talk to anybody at any point, at any place, for any length of time, usually long. But it's also the contrast from the other side. They've employed the Chuck Schumer playbook for years now, where you hide the candidate and you hide the candidate's views because maybe people won't like them. Well, what the heck does that say about your candidates and about your candidate's views? That you don't want them to hold press conferences, that you don't want them to be accessible, that you only want pre-scripted performances rather than actually having press conferences and answering questions. It's the widest contrast you could probably have between the two parties.
Yeah, and I think so, too. And now I think maybe they appreciate that he won, and we'll see how long that lasts. But you see what happened to the ratings. I mean, CNN has never been lower historically low, and they're for sale. MSNBC for sale, and they've basically been cut in half. And I don't think it's because Democratic Republican. I just think the American people left them behind. What is your take on that?
Well, I think MSNBC is going to rebound. As soon as Trump actually is enacting legislation, their viewers are going to be fired up. They're going to want to hear what terrible things are happening, and they're going to come back. CNN is in deep trouble. They're getting beaten by the Food Network. They got less viewers than my bar mitzvah because they've tried to go to the middle at times, which is great. But they don't have any credibility to do that. They spent decades mocking us, decades pushing one point of view. So now at the last minute, they realize all the left-wing viewers are at MSNBC. They have nowhere to go and no one trusts them.
So I want you to hear what Van Jones said. And I can think you can appreciate his insight, especially here.
Everybody keeps, the problem is you have a framework in your mind that how can Donald Trump? Guys, can we cut it out? Donald Trump is not an idiot. Donald Trump, let me just be very clear. Donald Trump is smarter than me, you, and yep. all critics. You know how I know? Because he has the White House, the Senate, the House.
Totally agree.
Court, the popular vote. This dude is a phenomenon. He is the most powerful human on earth and in our lifetime. And we're still saying, well, how is this guy? We look like idiots.
I mean, it sounds like you. I mean, that's something like you would be your analysis. I mean, of him. What is your take on that? He said that on CNN.
That right there is why CNN and the left don't have any viewers right now, because the left wing audience doesn't want to hear that. They don't like the reality. So why tune in? Why read a story that's going to reinforce a reality that you do not like? They generally on those networks deliver fan fiction. They tell people what they want to hear, whether or not it's true. But when that's the reality, who the heck is tuning in and reading all they can about it? When they hear Trump is getting indicted or he's going to get defeated or something like that, yeah, then they're going to get the viewers. But when your own guy, Van Jones, says you're lost and the opponent's better than us, who wants to hear the news?
Is he right?
Unquestionably, he's far smarter, far wiser tactically and politically than anybody ever gave him credit for. And what truly astounded me is the turnaround he did from 4 years ago, where 4 years ago he underperformed relative to other Republicans on the ballot. This time, he dramatically overperformed Republicans on the ballot. Usually, the more people are in office, the more people are sick of him. You know, Reagan, even in his second term, wasn't able to enact a ton of legislation. But here Trump is, 9 years on, more popular than ever. It's astounding.
Yeah, it is. And I think J.D. Vance has been really strong, much better than I thought. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I like Vance. You know, I think the importance of vice presidents is overstated, but he's certainly a smart, articulate guy. And it's notable, of course, that he was one of the few Trump nominees who succeeded and did really well in a state-based election in the midterms.
So when you see Speaker Johnson get blown up by Elon Musk and Donald Trump, Adam, what do you think that means for how we can expect over the next 4 years?
It's way too early to say. You know, let's remember that Trump dramatically increased federal spending even before the pandemic. So when they talk about how they want to cut spending, I love hearing it, but I'll believe it when I see it. Now, today, of course, Rand Paul floated the idea of Elon Musk as House Speaker, because the House can choose their own speaker. It doesn't need to be a member. Some outsider like that would be a real breath of fresh air and would say to me that maybe they're serious about it. That said, they've already claimed they won't cut entitlements, they won't cut Social Security, so there's no real great way for them to actually cut spending. If they could slow the increase, I'll smile.
The one thing that I thought that they could do is what he does best at his companies, and that is streamline it, make it more efficient. So you go, okay, Adam, you're going to get Social Security, but I deliver to you cheaper with less people, more efficiently. And I put people on deadlines and incentives, even within the civil union structure. I think that is where they can do it. They see weakness in every one of his own companies, some public, some private, and he's able to attack those weaknesses. And that's why he goes on the manufacturing floor and he just stares and he thinks, how do I fix Tesla? How do I fix this brain chip thing, this tunnel program, this boring company that I have? It's not boring, but they bore down into the earth. How do we fix SpaceX, Starlink? That's where I think he could come in. Don't touch my benefits, but the way I get it is with less manpower and cheaper.
I love hearing that stuff. Whenever I hear those quotes, I'm reminded of Goldwater saying, I have no interest in streamlining government or in making it more efficient, for I mean to reduce its size. You know, the challenge often with business people coming into government is that government has totally different mechanisms running it than a private business. You can't just go and wholesale fire a ton of employees from the government, much as we would like, much as we deserve. So it becomes incredibly challenging for business people when they get in there. But I'm very confident that if anybody could do it, it's Musk.
If I watch you online, I see a lot of your man on the street stuff, confronting these anti-Semitic behaviors, anti-Israel activists. Where does that come from?
Well, we are terrified of the influence DEI is having on our society. We have a team of hidden camera investigative journalists, and we've investigated literally hundreds of school districts across the country. I've been in over 250 school districts across the country, wow, which is a lot when I don't have kids, investigating DEI in states where it's banned. And in red states, in Fort Worth, Texas, and in Florida, they're pushing this DEI garbage that fuels the anti-Semitism we see in higher ed.
Give me an example.
So Fort Worth ISD is one of 20 school districts in Fort Worth, and they have a dozen full-time non-classroom members of their equity team. What are those people doing if not pushing this oppressed garbage into the minds of children all day long?
When you see it disappear from Walmart, and you hear it's leaving Disney now, they're pushing back on this transgender character, what's getting them out. Why'd they put them in? It's crazy. It's another conversation. Are you happy with the way it's trending, or are you worried that this is just symbolic and window dressing?
A little from column A, a little from column B, because when you go to states where this stuff is banned and you find it still happening, it makes you a bit of a skeptic. But at least some of the districts we go to have had to change things. We've been to a half dozen states now where DEI is banned from higher ed. Good thing you're sitting down. We found these people bragging to us about how they break the law. Similarly, we meet with woke...
with hidden camera work.
Exactly. And we meet with woke contractors from the Department of Defense who tell us how, yeah, these private businesses, some of them claim they get rid of DEI, but they actually don't. The Defense Department claims they make these reforms regarding DEI, but they actually don't.
So, yeah, you just wonder if the American public is going to rise up. Do you believe the trends towards private schools, school choice, is the answer?
I think it's the most transformative thing we're going to see in our lifetime for so many reasons. Obviously, kids will get educated instead of indoctrinated. But what's even greater, let's remember that these schools largely exist to funnel money from the taxpayers to big government left-wing candidates. Whether or not kids get educated, and they often don't, every 2 weeks the teachers get paid. A portion goes to the unions, and every election that goes to big government candidates.
So what did you learn being at Veritas?
The power of hidden camera investigative journalism. Moral outrage is the most powerful force in all of politics. Nothing elicits it better than hidden camera investigative journalism. I love that cops wear body cams. I wish politicians wore body cams. The next best thing is hidden camera investigative journalism.
And you're going to continue it?
Oh, heck yeah. We have a great team literally in the field today.
What have you discovered about where anti-Semitism is coming from? Well, it emerged for me, came out of nowhere. Did I think it was in pockets? Sure. It's just like... there's anti-everything, anti-Fox, whatever you want. But I never thought it existed in America like this. I never thought we'd see it in the Netherlands. What did you discover?
Well, you know, what's terrifying to see is that it gets pushed in red states. And then we, of course, investigated the encampments on college campuses this spring and discovered that most of the people were outside agitators. And our hidden camera journalist in Los Angeles discovered that the Revolutionary Communist Party was organizing the encampment at UCLA. So when we say these people are Marxists, it sounds like hyperbole. It sounds silly when you call them communists. It's literally the Revolutionary Communist Party. These are anti-Westerners.
What do you think happens to that sentiment when Trump takes over?
Well, they're obviously going to be incredibly fired up. I'm worried about violence in a variety of ways. Obviously, the inauguration is going to be a dangerous day for many people, unfortunately, to be in D.C. But we'll keep investigating them, yeah, and we'll keep exposing them.
If they thought Biden was too pro-Israel, are they familiar with what Donald Trump's record is?
Oh, I mean, by the time Donald Trump takes office, Israel might have wiped out all of their enemies at the rate that they're going. It's amazing. But we need to get rid of them in higher education. Columbia University, the most anti-Semitic university in America, gets $1 billion from the federal government annually. That's some waste you can cut.
And out of my hunch, one of the biggest stories in modern politics is going to be the 4-year cover-up of the diminishment of Joe Biden and what he actually was doing and not doing behind the scenes. We're beginning to get that. The Wall Street Journal today, the New York Times on Monday. Where do you think that story is going?
Well, you know,
how bad do you think it was?
we saw the debate. We all did. And I was one of the people who consistently said Biden's not as bad as you're claiming. Whenever you see him actually speak, he's not that bad. He's always been somebody who's been gaffe prone. But by that final year, that's truly terrifying. And I'm sure China and everybody was watching that debate thinking, oh, man, we can get away with it, with whatever the heck we want. Who's at the wheel at the United States?
I'm worried about the next 20 days, yeah. I mean, 30 days,
yeah.
Where we're going.
Well, that's why I think most leaders are already treating Trump as if he's the president.
Right. And you think a year from now, they'll be back to normal. Trump is vulgarian. He's irresponsible. He doesn't think things out. He's not worthy. You think we're going to go back to that same 2017 mantra?
If they desire to have ratings at MSNBC, they've got to tell their audience stories that their audience wants to hear. And they don't want to endlessly hear how smart Trump is and how he beat us.
All right, Adam, thanks so much. Where do we find you? Where do we find you online?
Sure. Our website is aim.org. We're active on every social media platform. We've got a lot of investigations coming out in January.
Man, you certainly have the energy. Adam, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is not what America wants. November 5th was a decisive defeat for the Democratic Party. She lost every single swing state. It wasn't a squeaker like it was in 2016. This was a resounding defeat. And right now, Kamala Harris is indulging in delusions of running for governor of California, possibly in 2026, or even president again in 2028. America has said this is not what we don't want to be coconut pilled. We do not want Kamala Harris. We don't want failed border policies.
Yet you saw Kamala Harris speak this week about her big comeback. She was a leader, keep fighting all this stuff. And that was Linda Lee, a Democratic strategist, leader, and doesn't want her. Of course you shouldn't want her. She's got no talent and doesn't study, can't work, can't organize. Of course you don't want her. I don't even know what does she. I didn't want her legal advice, let alone political advice, let alone be a leader of anything that I was a part of. But California, that's up to you guys to straighten that out. I don't know if you're going to. But in terms of the Democratic Party, this is the first test because we're watching Hakeem Jeffries step up. And he's saying that that was a good border deal. That was a good deal that we had, a CR. We signed off on it. There were things for me and things for them. And now we have to start for zero. And they want to paint the Republicans as a chaotic caucus. Problem is they already won. They wanted to make them unelectable and might let them the House seem like a place that can't be run by Kevin McCarthy or Speaker Johnson, run by extremists like Matt Gaetz. But they won. They still have the majority, a slim one. And they won the Senate and they won the White House. So I don't think they really know what hit them. And they don't. They also know for a few more weeks, the Republicans don't have nearly the leverage they'll eventually have. So I don't know how this ends. I know this. I want to see everybody in person coming up on February 15th at the Florida Theater in Jacksonville, especially WOKV listeners. You're right in the area. We've got 1,000 seats there. It's the biggest venue we usually have. But we're getting a ton of sales, VIP opportunities. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I get to see you in person. I'll meet everybody before the show that goes for the meet and greet and then be able to sign and take pictures after. Thanks so much for listening. Keep it here. Don't forget One Nation Saturday night. That is coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern Time.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.